Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. I'm hoping you've become addicted to my radio show by now, but if you're tuning in for the first time, you're about to attend a free class all about dogs. If you're a dog lover and you live with one or more dogs, I promise you you'll benefit from listening every Thursday morning from 10 to 10:30. Each week we discuss a new topic, and today's program is all about canine play behavior. My guest today is a regular here in the doghouse. Her name is Barbara Handelman. Barbara has trained her own service dogs. She's a certified dog behavior consultant and is the author of Canine Behavior, a photo-illustrated handbook about canine body language. Her book contains 1,000 stunning pictures, not just of dogs, but of wolves, fox, and coyotes. In her book, she explains what you're seeing in these magnificent photos as to each animal's intent as he or she is interacting with their own species. Barbara also teaches an online class in understanding canine behavior. As a matter of fact, I just completed her class, and it was extremely informative and helpful to me in my business as a dog trainer. Her class would benefit anyone who lives with a dog, believe me. Have you ever wondered whether your dog was playing appropriately with another dog? Have you ever felt a little nervous when your dog's play got too rough? Unless you have a good knowledge about dog body language, it can be very confusing if you're not sure whether to interrupt play or if you should just let them continue play wrestling. Barbara Handelman is going to help us be clearer on that issue as we talk about normal canine play behavior. But before we talk to Barbara, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338. Or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338, or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. We have Barbara Handelman on the line. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Rini.
How are ya?
I'm good.
Good. You know, we have a lot to talk about today, so I'm just about ready to start tossing questions at you. Are you ready to get started?
I'm ready to go.
Okay. Over the week, you sent me several videos to watch of your own dog in preparation for our interview today. One of those videos clearly showed two dogs having exchange games with each other, playing with sticks and other toys. Is this common play behavior?
Common play behavior, I think it's not common for it to work as well as it does with these dogs, this particular pair of dogs. Nate, who is my German Shepherd, and Hawk is a friend's German Shepherd, they are almost identical in age, size, speed. They are well matched in every dimension, and that helps keep the play on balance and safe.
Okay. Do you think that dogs would be making toy exchanges if they didn't get along or if their play styles weren't well matched?
No.
Okay.
That you'd be more apt to see more resource guarding that would escalate easily into ritualized aggression and real aggression.
Okay. I don't think our listeners would have a clue as to what ritualized aggression is. Can you briefly explain what that is?
I can. Most canine I won't call them fights. spats, arguments, are ritualized. And what ritualized means is they go through all of the actions of a real fight, but there is no harm done to either animal.
Okay.
It sounds like a fight. It looks like a fight. And one dog, if they're not interrupted, one dog will emerge the victor. The other will have submitted. It depends on who is really the most invested in that particular resource at that particular moment in time.
Okay.
So ritualized aggression is really how almost all disputes between canines are settled,
mm-hmm.
including canines in the wild.
Okay.
Canines in the wild can't afford to have bloodletting fights. An injured wolf is often a dead wolf because they can't hunt.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that makes sense. I noticed when watching your videos that the dogs playing together would actually give each other timeouts. Do you think those dogs knew they could go over the edge if they didn't take some rest periods?
I think they did.
So,
I think that they, there's a very clear rhythm to their play,
mm-hmm.
and it has taken practice for them to get to that point with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they clearly stop. They're on the land where we're playing, there are a couple of natural springs, and they'll go there and plop down in the water to cool down. They'll stop at a distance from one another and lie down and just, play it solely with whatever toy they happen to possess at that moment. But these two very naturally give themselves and each other a break from play.
Okay. And so when dogs have toys to play with, I know that, I think that you even told us this a while ago when we were having a discussion about dog parks, that it is best not to have toys in these parks because of the issues of resource guarding that one dog or several dogs may exhibit. So, but it was clear that these dogs were not really resource guarding. They were actually just exchanging them. Okay, I'll take this toy and the other dog would take the stick and then they would actively go and exchange them. One drops the toy and one drops the stick and each dog goes and gets the other. It was kind of really neat to watch. So what do you feel about that? Do you feel that most people should remove toys when there are dogs that are playing together, or should they just let them figure it out?
Well, when Nate and Hawk first started playing together, if they would find a toy that had emerged out of the snowdrift, we would take it away. They had played together at least 3 times before we let sticks and toys enter their play.
Okay. Okay.
We wanted to be really comfortable that if disagreements arose between them, that they could settle them, that they had mutual respect for each other, and it was only after we had had a huge windstorm and there were so many sticks on the ground we couldn't possibly control the access to resources,
mm-hmm.
that they started introducing sticks and found toys into their play. But keep in mind, this is not taking place at a dog park.
Right.
There's two dogs who know each other extremely well now and who are very well matched.
Yes.
The matching of play buddies is very important. I put up a video last night on YouTube of Nate playing with an 8-month-old beagle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
His play dates with Dante the beagle were not nearly as calm and stress-free as his play dates with Hawk the German Shepherd
mm-hmm.
are.
Mm-hmm.
Dante did a lot of baying, as beagles will do.
Right.
And his movements are very different. He's a hound, Nate is a German Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate didn't quite know what to make of this noisy little dog. And we had to remain vigilant when they were playing because it was easy for Nate to go into an overly aroused state and for Dante to get intimidated.
Really?
Yeah. And we have ended those play dates because we decided they were not well matched.
How about that? Okay, so for everybody who's listening, I want to make it clear that we will let you know where you can see these videos. I'm anxious to see the ones with the beagles. I know that you sent me several, and I did watch them all. But if there are new ones on there, I definitely want to take a look at them.
They are. They're on Nate now has his own YouTube account. It's called Assistance Dog Nate.
Okay. That's good. So is that what they do? They go on YouTube and then they type in Assistance Dog Nate?
Yes.
All right. So we'll repeat that later on in the program for just in case other people are going to be joining us in the middle or late in the show.
Okay. And I can put that on my Facebook account and on if you have it on your blog too, people can find us.
Absolutely. And just to let people know, I did just finish taking your class, and I still don't feel like I'm an expert. You know, I mean, unless you see everything, you know, yourself, you can't be an expert. I mean, there's still going to be things that I question, and so I'm always learning about these signals and canine body language and really studying canine play behavior because I want to make sure when I'm working with dogs or when I have a class that I don't wind up making a mistake either. So, you know, I give you a lot of credit. You are studying this yourself as you give classes and as you study your own dogs. And so this is always a work in progress. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I think a work in progress is exactly how I would explain it. You know, when I was writing my book and collect drafts, I got teased a lot for working on the never-ending book because I would find a photograph and then have to define the behavior. And then I'd find a new behavioral description and have to find a photo to
match it. Yeah.
To illustrate it. So it, you know, the book became 400 pages long and has 1,000 photos in it. And that's not what I set out to do.
Right.
But that's what evolved.
Right.
In preparing to teach the course on canine behavior, I have collected easily another 1,000 photos. There are very few duplications in the class with what's in the book.
Okay.
Because I'm always taking photos, I'm collecting photos, and the depth and breadth of canine signaling on their language is so complex and varied and looks different from one dog to the next.
I agree.
I don't think anyone ever becomes such an expert that they can afford to stop studying.
Okay. That makes me feel better. I feel like, well, I must be a little slow here. But no, because it's, you can't possibly memorize everything that you're watching. You just have to watch the dogs that you're focusing on at the time and hope that you're going to catch the most important signals of all. Listen, when many dogs don't or can't self-regulate their play excitement, and when they wind up getting overly aroused or they get too tired, should people intervene if their dogs don't know when to quit?
Absolutely. I equate dogs playing with each other as being a lot like preschoolers at a birthday party.
Okay.
Anybody who's ever held a birthday party for a three-year-old knows that usually the birthday child ends up in a meltdown. And everybody's disgruntled because it's supposed to be his or her day, and it's all exciting, and why aren't they happy? Well, the parents haven't been keeping a check on just how much excitement was going on and anticipation. Contributes to fatigue and being overtired causes children, adults, and dogs to become cranky. And then the threshold for arousal is that much closer to the edge, and gets closer and closer and closer until, dogs fall over the edge and things, evolve, deteriorate the fight.
Right.
So, I think dogs naturally play together for about 10 minutes. And then they either lose interest, become overly aroused, or tired. And what I see a lot is people pushing their dogs to keep playing. Because, well, I interrupted my day and I got you into the car and I drove all the way to the car.
Right.
And here we are and you've played for 10 minutes and now you're done. I don't think so.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And, you know, the dog park can be a great place for practicing on calm self-control. People go to the dog park because they want to see their friends, their human friends, and have a conversation. Great opportunity to put the dog on a leash, put the dog on a downstay, and talk to your friend.
Great idea.
Because then the dog gets a break, the dog gets some practice in self-control, and gets a chance to kind of cool its depths, its heart rate and respiration rate go back down to normal. Then if it feels like playing again, great.
Okay. So outside of the dog park or inside the dog park, at what time would you advise people to intervene when their dogs are playing? Should they wait until the dogs get a little too tired? Should they start seeing those signals happen, if they can recognize them, and then give the dog a break? Or should they just wait until, you know, they're just ready to explode, which I think most people wind up doing before they intervene?
I think keeping in mind that 8 to 10 minute natural play out time limit is a good measure. If the dogs haven't stopped themselves within that time or less, you can do no harm by calling your dog back to you, by walking in and interrupting and putting him on leash for a couple minutes of quiet time. You can never err on the side of caution. You can't make a mistake if you're cautious.
Okay, that's a really good point.
While you're seeing obvious signs of stress or escalating arousal, the dog will take a lot longer to calm down and may not return to a state of mind in which it's safe for him to play again.
Okay. One of the things that you wanted to talk about today are how to choose dogs for play dates, so that they make a good match, and so that the dogs can feel safe and have fun playing with each other. But certain decisions should be made prior to deciding who that dog should play. So what factors would you want to consider before deciding, well, you know, maybe we'll try having Fluffy play with Buffy?
I think size is the first and most important consideration. With Dante the Beagle and Nate, there was a huge size discrepancy, which added a level of tension not only for the dogs but for the people, because we kept having to interrupt and tell Nate to be gentle because he doesn't know that his oversized feet could really hurt Dante. And German Shepherds play rough. And a foot coming down on the back of another German Shepherd isn't going to do any harm, but a foot coming down in the middle of the back of a Beagle could very well do harm.
Okay.
So size, speed, strength, and most importantly, I think the most important factor is the socialization experience of the other dog. Nate and Hawk, his best buddy, have both had a lot of experience playing with other dogs, especially other German Shepherds. So we went into it with a fair degree of confidence that they would be able to regulate, modulate their own play. We didn't know about, you know, the greatest stress was we were always meeting on one or the other's territory. And would that be an issue to either of them? It turned out not to be.
Okay.
we saw a little hackling in the beginning, and that quickly resolved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, dogs who are well socialized learn to self-handicap. Self-handicap means they do something to moderate their own speed or strength or other physical abilities in order to keep the play going. As equally matched as Hawk and Nate are, Nate is faster.
Mm-hmm.
He's physically able to run faster than Hawk can.
Mm-hmm.
When they play chase, Hawk is usually leading. And we've watched this and watched this. And when Nate leads, Hawk gets very frustrated. Because unless Nate decides to get caught, Hawk can't catch him. But if Hawk's in the lead, Nate can moderate his own speed. And he can catch Hawk or not. And they both are motivated in a game of chase to keep the game going.
Mm-hmm.
So Nate will run slower so that he can chase Hawk longer. And in that sense, Nate is self-handicapping. He's slowing himself down.
That's interesting. Is that shown on the videos that you have on YouTube?
Yes. See who's chasing whom and how the chase usually ends. It usually ends with the chaser's body slamming,
mm-hmm.
dog who's being chased. And that's the signal that the chase is over.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Tag, you're it.
Right. So during the videos, are you narrating?
No. I have broken them up with text clips. And I may at some point narrate them, but I haven't had a chance yet.
Okay. All right. That is helpful.
Yeah.
Part of the videos that you sent to me has a little puppy in there. She's a German Shepherd puppy, and her name is Lucy.
Right.
How old is Lucy?
Lucy is now 14 weeks old. So
okay.
I've been seeing her in the videos from the time she was 8.5 weeks old until now.
Mm-hmm.
And how she interacts with the big dogs and the big dogs interact with her.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy is Hawk's little sister and they live together.
Oh, cool.
And Nate is fascinated with Lucy but not exactly clear what she is and how he's supposed to behave for her.
Okay.
So, Lucy does a lot of hiding and popping out at Nate and they have their own game
mm-hmm.
to play. But you also see Lucy jumping on Hawk's head and even jumping on top of Nate.
Yep.
Still has her puppy license.
Okay, so you've mentioned a term here, puppy license, and I think that, you know, we should really explain to the listeners exactly what that is because many of these people get puppies and they already have an older dog living in the home. So let's tell them what puppy license is.
Yes. Little puppies, puppies under the age of 4 months, have what we call puppy license, which means that they can get away with outrageous behavior as dogs. They can bite too hard, they can stand on their heads, they can hump them, they can steal toys away, and the older dogs will, for the most part, tolerate all but the most outrageous behavior
mm-hmm.
Without any severe disciplining. When puppies, depending on the age and breed of the dog, 4 to 5 months, the puppy license expires because the puppy is becoming an adolescent.
Okay.
And at that point, the adult dogs will start implementing more discipline and say, hey, no, I don't want you standing on my head anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, you can't have that toy.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're humping me? Ah, go away.
Right.
And gradually they teach the puppies the rules of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And help them become civilized canine citizens.
Percentage wise, I don't know if you can give me a percentage, but would you say it's mostly common for the older dog to give a puppy license, or should people be very aware that possibly their own resident dogs might not ever accept a puppy?
I think any physically and mentally healthy adult dog will grant a puppy license.
And do you include that into their socialization history also?
Yes, and what I was going to say is they will grant it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they will tolerate the behavior. They may simply move away without, they may lift the lip and say, that's enough, and then they take themselves away rather than expecting the puppy to be taken away. And I believe that the adult dog should always be given a place where they can escape from the puppy.
Okay.
Dogs tolerate a lot of pain without letting us know they're in pain, and it makes them grouchy.
Yes.
And an adult dog should not be expected, any more than an 8-year-old should be expected to have a toddler come in and play with all its toys and destroy its room and be natured about it.
Right.
we have to show some respect for the older dogs too, especially
right.
if they are elder dogs.
Right, right, right. Well, listen, we have 2 minutes left,
okay.
And in those 2 minutes, I really want you to tell people about your class. First, tell them where they can get your book, the Canine Photo Illustrated Handbook. Tell them where they can get that, and just briefly tell us about your class and how they can register for it.
Okay. Well, I should tell you that there are there's a second printing of my book in which the photographs are far superior to the reproduction in the first printing, and you are only guaranteed of getting a second printing copy of the book to order directly from me at my website, which is wolfandwordpress.com, or from Dogwise. If you order from Amazon or other wholesalers or retail bookstores, you may still get a first printing book. About the course is offered by etrainingfordogs.com. You can find these links on my website and on Rainey's. The course is a 10-week course. It's available live, which means you get to discuss readings and videos and all the class material with fellow students and with me in real time, or on demand, where you can take the course at your own pace. At any time, really, because it's available all just online, but you don't get the opportunity to discuss. You can ask me questions by email, but it's different from sort of being there.
I think that you allow, once the class is over, aren't those on-demand classes available for a certain period of time?
Well, it's different. Every live class is recorded.
Okay.
And the recordings of those live classes are available for several months. So if you miss a class or you want to go back and review, you can always go back and look at the recorded version of the live class.
That's wonderful. Barbara, you're always a pleasure to talk to on the phone here, and you're an educator, a wonderful educator, and I hope that people recognize your name every time that I tell everybody that you're coming, because you're really a treasure to have here, and I appreciate that. And you and I are going to talk soon and set up our next date, and maybe we can talk more about puppy play and puppy license and things like that, because
okay.
I think that's
always
really important.
Fun to talk with you too, Rainey.
All right, darling. Have a good day.
Bye
bye. Thank you very much, listeners, for tuning in to Thursday in the Doghouse. Please tune in again next Thursday from 10 to 10:30 for Thursday in the Doghouse. See you later.